virtual couch.
Let's get cozy, comfortable, and ready to hear some enlightening, empowering,
inspiring talk
on the virtual couch with Leticia on Leticia's virtual couch.
And developing now, the teen accused of stabbing his mother to death on Thanksgiving Day will face a judge for the first time tomorrow. This was not the first time police were called to this home. Joe Ripley spoke with neighbors about their interactions with that family.
He never seemed like the kind of kid that would just attack you. It's still mind-blowing.
Daniel Egbonzi continues to process the shock he feels 24 hours later. A mother, 42-year-old Marcia Chance, stabbed several times, lost her life Thanksgiving Day. Gwinnett police say her 18-year-old son was holding the knife.
And the fact that this kind of thing happens completely out the blue literally will make the neighborhood's time stop. And now everyone's asking questions.
The son is charged with felony murder, aggravated assault, and felony weapons charges.
With one person in jail and one person dead, and now a juvenile child without his mom or his brother.
Police would not give a motive, but did reveal that officers were called out to the home before. Neighbors told us the teen had mental health challenges.
Talking to himself or singing lyrics of songs, you know, maybe some bad words, but, you know, he didn't ever bother nobody where nobody was scared of him.
Daniel Egbonzi says he'll never see his neighborhood the same.
If you keep things quiet, they can grow and just blow up in your face. I myself feel like maybe I should have just had a conversation with him just to pick his brain a bit. He probably would have been actually a nice kid. You never know.
Gwinnett police say the son will have his first court appearance Saturday morning at 8:30.
Hello, you guys, and welcome to Leticia's Virtual Couch. I will give a trigger warning as today's episode is quite heavy. Today I will be discussing Black femicide, which is the killing or murder of Black women. You know, my platform again is to empower, inspire, and enlighten my audience. Most importantly, I want you to remain safe. I hope that any information that I provide to you would help to enlighten you and to look within, and to also learn to look outside of yourself so that you can remain safe and so that you can help others remain safe as well as protect other people. Now today, the topic may be triggering for men and women, and that's Black men and women, if you will. See, the number one perpetrator per stats, this is all factual. The number one perpetrator of Black women are Black men. And I know I probably lost a lot of you from that statement alone. However, in order for us to change as a community, we have to be able to have the hard conversations. You know, the conversations that get us thinking, the conversations that may even hurt a little. Because with any change, there's going to be a period of being uncomfortable, hearing things that you don't want to hear, but all for the sake of change and protecting ourselves and one another, right? That's the goal. If we're going to build community and generational wealth and all these other buzz phrases that we like to talk about and utter in spaces to seem like we're woke, we have to learn how to protect our women. Men too. But this episode is about Black femicide, okay? So please stay tuned. You do not want to miss this episode, okay? So get whatever you need to stay comfortable because I don't want to lose you. I want you to stay with me, okay? So please stay tuned.
What the fuck is that?
Holla.
Bro, go on.
Yeah, what you talking about?
You're embarrassing yourself.
I'm embarrassing you, bitch.
Who is
you? Who is you? Who is you?
Nobody to you.
Oh my God.
Oh my God.
Oh my God.
Go, 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 go. What the?
The discussions on this podcast is for informational purposes only. If you find yourself becoming triggered by any topic, please refrain from listening and reach out to your nearest emergency room or dial 911. If you desire to seek therapy in the future, please Google and find your nearest therapist in close proximity to you. Thank you.
Okay, welcome back, and let us get into some things. Now, before I begin, I would like to give another trigger warning and disclaimer to let you know that this information delivered in this podcast may be a little heavy for you. So if you have to leave and come back when I'm speaking on things more lighthearted, I totally understand, because I do not want my platform to cause any harm. Now, you have to assess yourself, because I can't do that for you. So you know what's triggering for you. And so if you feel at any time during this episode, or even now if you want to head out, that is perfectly fine, okay? Now, for the rest of you who want to learn more about this topic, let's start right now. Now, our favorite friend and coacher, and I said that very sarcastically on purpose, she's been in the Twitter headlines again with those Twitter fingers. Now, she made a statement alluding to the fact that Black women are mostly murdered at the hands of Black men. Of course she would say that, right? As you know, her rhetoric is always controversial, and I think she does that on purpose because people talk about her, right? That's why usually people who are controversial, they know what to say. They know what to do to get a rise out of people. And she is very successful at doing it, I should say. Now, don't get it twisted. 85% of white people that are killed in America each year are murdered by other white people. And we all know why, because, well, I'm not going to say we all know why. This is the reason why, for those of you who don't know, because I can't assume that you do. The majority of the time, people are harmed by people who are in close proximity to them, because it's just logistics, right? It's location. They are more apt to harm people that are in their own communities, even their own friend circles, and even their own family, okay? But saying that still doesn't negate the fact that Black femicide is a major problem, okay? So I don't want to water that down. I just wanted to give some context to that statistics. As you know, on social media, good old social media, we see skewed stats all the time, because it's very easy to find a stat that is slanted towards your argument and your rhetoric. It's very easy. I can say that the sky is pink, and I bet you I can find a stat on it. Because certain times when you look at the sky, depending on the sunset and your location, the sky can be pink sometime, right? Okay. So with that said, you know, my podcast tagline states, I like to enlighten, empower, and inspire. And I do. You know, I really purposely create content to do those very things. I want you to leave knowing a little bit more than what you came with. Okay. So with that said, let's get in more of the topic. This episode, again, is talking about Black femicide. And it's something that we really need to talk about. I don't think a lot of people have talked about it. And I think in more recent years, and even in the few weeks, we've been seeing a lot of pages. I know I have a lot of pages come up, a lot of discussions, even on social media, Clubhouse, and things of that sort. People are really having discussions about this, but it does ruffle a lot of feathers. Now, the great Malcolm X You know, he stated that black women, and I'm just summarizing what he said because I think you need to listen to his speech. I think it's, you know, he really highlights some very important points that we should ponder on. But basically, he said in one of his speeches, and you may even find it on YouTube, black women are the most disrespected of all groups. Okay. And again, I summarized it. So go right ahead and find that speech. And, you know, you can even email me what your thoughts are about this, too, at virtualcouchpodcast1@gmail.com. But what do you think about that? What do you think about the statement that black women are the most disrespected of all groups? My personal opinion, I really say it's true. As a black woman and as just an observer of what's going on in society, I probably would say, where's the lie? Okay, but again, it's going to ruffle some feathers because a lot of men, particularly black men, get a little upset when we say that. But I digress. Let's go into the definition of femicide. Okay, femicide or feminicide is a sex-based hate crime term broadly defined as the intentional killing of women or girls because they are female, though definitions vary depending on its cultural context. Feminist author Diana E.H. Russell was the first person to define and disseminate this term in modern times in 1976. She defines the word as the killing of females by males because they are female. Now, other feminists place emphasis on the intention or purpose of the act being directed at females specifically because they are female. Others include the killing of females by female. And let me stick a pin in that right there, because when you think about the word femicide, you know, people automatically think it is just the perpetrator being male. But in this instance, in my topic today, I will be talking about black femicide and the perpetrator being black men. But yeah, females can be perpetrators of other females. We see this all the time. Now, before I begin, I don't want to hear any rhetoric about why am I picking on the black man. Now, let me just say this. My stance is let's clean up our own community first before we go outside. Now, I use this analogy when I had a debate with a friend of mine actually recently, and they got my analogy, and I think we were talking about the R. Kelly saga, and I say saga really because I feel like it's the trap in the closet saga all over again that we're witnessing with his court cases and all this hoopla fiasco, if you will. But I said, okay, say for instance you have two homes that are burning. One is on the other side of town and one is right next door to your house. Which one are you going to extinguish first? I will hope you say the one next door. You know why? Because it will endanger your house before the other one ever will, right? And that's the case of when we're talking about violence within our own community. It is not to shun, it is not to belittle, it is not to pick on ones in our community. It's to say we need to take care of home first, okay? That is all this is saying. So I wanted to just explain that, okay? By using that very colorful analogy that I'm very proud of. Okay. Now, femicide is usually perpetrated by men. However, again, if you're going with the definition of killing of women, other females can also be perpetrators of violence against other women, as I stated. Now, an alternative term offered is gendercide. And I don't know if you've ever heard that before, but some use that to be more inclusive. But many feminists say, do not like this term because they feel it silences and minimizes the attacks and atrocities action against women in a male-dominated society. So many feminists feel like they want to use femicide because it has you know, the word female in there, if you will, it alludes to the fact that it's an act against women. And so there's some debate if they should alternate between the two. But I think the most I've heard has been femicide. Now, feminists also argue that the motives for femicide are vastly different than those for androcide. Now, androcide is basically the systematic killing of men or boys or males in general. And I have to agree with that because if you think about it, females are usually harmed for very different and distinct reasons than males or boys are. You know, a lot of times we see men and boys being harmed in gang violence and other acts of aggression. And women, usually it's more of a control thing, your sexual assaults and things of that sort. So I would have to agree with that. Now, I know that was a lot. So what I want you to do now is just take a deep breath, just breathe and relax. And again, if this is too heavy for you, this is another trigger warning before I take this break, okay? And so if you want to just, you know, say, I'm going to sit this one out, I totally understand that, okay? But for those of you who's going to ride the wave with me, I will be back after this break, okay? Hey, this is your girl Letitia coming to you from the virtual couch. I want to take a little bit of your time today to discuss how to find the right therapist. Now, like with anything, your hairstylist, your gardener, your medical doctor, it may take a few tries before you find the right fit. Finding the right therapist is no different. So stay the course and don't give up. Also, I want to empower you to ask questions. Do not feel like you're being intrusive by asking questions, because guess what? This is the person that's going to lead you and guide you towards your healing. And this is a very important partnership. So I will say this even as a therapist myself, if a therapist becomes offended by any questions that you may have, just like with any other individual that I discussed before, like your doctor, your gardener, whoever, someone, you know, working on your home, if they become offended, you're probably not going to hire them, right? Exactly. Your therapist is no different. So don't feel offended. Don't be offended by the degrees and the licenses and yes, all those hard things we worked for, but we're here for you. And so it is your right to ask every question you need to ask to make sure it is the right fit for you. And again, it may take a few tries. And again, it doesn't mean that you're a bad person or that therapist is a bad person either. It just means that, you know what, they may not be the right person to guide you on your journey. So I want to leave you with a few resources. PsychologyToday.com is a resource where you can view various therapists, and you can even input your area by your zip code, your city, and your state to find the therapist nearest you. You can also go to therapyforblackgirls.com and therapyforblackmen.org. Please seek these resources out. They are awesome. There are some wonderful, very experienced therapists on these sites, some of which are my beautiful colleagues, and I know the hard work that they do, and they are waiting to hear from you. Okay, so I'm not gonna take any more of your time because I know you can't wait to get to that computer, right? And search out that therapist. So I'm not going to say anything further. If you want to tell me about your experience, I would love to hear about it. Please email me at virtualcouchpodcast1@gmail.com. And happy hunting. Take care.
February 2013, in a Columbia Heights impound lot, a vehicle with a woman's body inside.
She was so important.
The woman was Lakeisha Lee's younger sister, Brittany.
The first dispatcher, someone that we spoke with, said that oh, she's 18. This is something that they usually do. She could come home in just a couple days. We knew, no, she is missing. Something is wrong.
Police caught Brittany's killer, and he pleaded guilty to killing her and another woman. Police believed he met both online. Lakeisha says Brittany was a victim of sexual exploitation. She remembers waiting weeks before Brittany was found.
So for 2 weeks, we couldn't even think. You can't eat, you can't sleep, you can't. And we knew something was wrong.
If they're classified as runaways, you don't get the same response, right? So you don't get Amber Alerts. You don't get the same media response.
Representative Ruth Richardson is the chief author of the bill which created the Task Force on Missing and Murdered African American Women.
And it's not just about one thing or one system, but there's a lot that needs to be done in order to ensure that we have not only more equitable coverage, but also to address the fact that when Black women and girls go missing, their cases are open 4 times longer.
The task force will look at the systemic causes behind the violence and ways to end it to give all families hope.
Hope is humanity's fuel in this population. They're really low on it.
Brittany's killer was sentenced to life in prison. Meanwhile, among many other things, this new task force also will look at ways to track just how prevalent this violence is against Black women and girls to get more accurate numbers about what's happening. They'll submit a report to the legislature on all their findings in about a year, December 2022. By the way, Representative Richardson, who we heard from in the story there, she's behind this task force. She also lost a family member. She says she lost a cousin in Mississippi about a decade ago, and to this day, they don't know what happened.
No, but hopefully this task force can help solve some of this. So many families wanting answers.
Yeah,
thanks for shedding light on that, Jen.
Did y'all enjoy the break? Now find your spot on the virtual couch and get ready to hear our girl, Letitia, drop some more gems on ya. Drop some more gems on them, Letitia.
Letitia, drop some more gems on them.
8 hours after finding a woman dead inside her Reseda home, officers say they made an arrest. The victim, Michelle Avon, was found yesterday morning on Covello Street near Tampa. Police arrested the suspect in Westchester. KCAL9's Jeff Nguyen has more on this tragic case.
Family members have been arriving at this house in Reseda, which was a crime scene hours earlier. It's the home of banking executive Michelle Avon, who was found dead inside yesterday morning. Anthony Posada lives across the street.
She was a very prominent banker and very successful lady, and, you know, that's respectful.
Avon was a senior vice president with Bank of America, working to recruit women and underrepresented employees globally. The 48-year-old was a sponsor and big supporter of the Taste of Soul Festival that's put on by the LA Sentinel. Community leader and Sentinel executive publisher Danny Bakewell said Michelle was a dear friend and dedicated warrior for our community and a dear friend to me and my entire family. This news is just devastating.
She was a great lady. The family, they're really friendly.
The LAPD arrested 52-year-old Anthony Turner yesterday in Westchester on suspicion of murder. Neighbor Anthony Posada says he often saw Turner at the home, and he says Turner was outside after police arrived. They'd been called here to do a welfare check after a relative was unable to get a hold of Avon. Once inside, officers found her body, saying she appeared to have suffered trauma to her face.
It's a shame. I mean, it's just, why? You know, why would people do something like that to someone like her? I mean, she's the mom of a nice family. She's a prestigious lady. I mean, why would anyone?
See here on News 5, a disturbing report confirms what our investigators uncovered in our year-long series on domestic violence.
When women are murdered, the killer, more often than not, is their intimate partner. But that's not all the report revealed. 5 on Your Side investigator Sarah Buddison is here to tell us tonight which women are most at risk.
Danita, the CDC report reviewed murders in 18 states over 18 years. It found Black women are twice as likely to be murdered as women of other races. So we asked why.
He came in with intention to kill me.
It was a cold October night.
But it all backfired.
When Sonia Garth's ex-husband showed up at her door.
When he shot me, she jumped up to to save her mother.
So Rufus Gray turned his gun on his stepdaughter.
And he shot her.
The bullet struck 12-year-old Davia dead.
And all I can hear in my mind is that he shot me, Mommy.
It's very dangerous to leave an intimate partner violence relationship.
Victoria Grant is the justice system advocate for the Domestic Violence and Child Advocacy Center.
That's the most dangerous time. Your risk of becoming murdered increases by 75%.
But this new CDC study found one group of women are more at risk. Reviewing data from more than a dozen states, including Ohio, it found Black women are murdered at twice the rate of white, Hispanic, and Asian women.
We just don't trust systems because systems have never worked in our favor.
So Black domestic violence victims are less likely to seek counseling or call police, increasing the risk they'll be killed by their intimate partner.
It's just not a simple matter of leaving. I have to have a plan in place that will allow me to leave safely without the risk of homicide.
When it happened to me, I didn't know about domestic violence agencies. I didn't know about shelters or people that you can talk to on the phone.
Sonia was abused for years before she kicked Gray to the curb. She had no idea leaving him could have lethal results.
We are forever destroyed. I can't pick the pieces up and say, okay, well, we're going to move on. We're going to do this. There's no pieces to pick up.
The CDC study confirms something else we uncovered in our year-long investigation. Guns were the most common way women were killed. Right now, there is no Ohio law to guarantee domestic abusers turn over their weapons, even when a judge orders them to do so.
Hey guys, and welcome back to the show. Now again, this episode is not to berate or degrade Black men, okay? I don't want you to think that. I have a lot of Black men who listen to my podcast, and I'm so grateful to you guys for joining me on my comfy couch. This podcast episode is only to bring awareness and highlight the issues to address the issues causing and perpetuating Black femicide. To do otherwise would be unproductive, right? So let's get into some stats right now. Now, according to The Guardian, which was dated October 6, 2021, at least 4 Black women and girls were murdered per day in the United States in 2020, according to statistics released by the FBI last week, a sharp increase compared with the year before. The FBI recorded at least 405 additional murders of Black women and girls last year as homicides surge across the country. And experts caution that even that stark number probably represents an undercount. Wow, that's a lot, right? Now, to go further, more vulnerable to violence, Black women are more vulnerable to violence, according to these stats as well. Now, the increase in murders of Black women comes as the overall U.S. murder rate rose nearly 30% during the pandemic, the biggest jump in 6 decades. The number of people murdered increased sharply across racial groups and in big and small cities. Wow. So that's saying during the pandemic, there was a spike in the murder of Black women, which is, you know, really sad. And we know during the pandemic, and we talked about it in relationships, their, you know, increase of stress, increase of depression, anxiety. And I would guess there are some correlations there as well. Okay. So let's go on. Most of America's homicide victims remain men, and Black men and boys continue to face the highest overall risk of homicide. The rising murder rate has affected Black women across the country. Baltimore, Maryland recorded the highest ever number of women killed in 2020. If you know about Baltimore, it's really been number one in the murder capita in the U.S. I think a close
a contender would be Detroit, if I'm not mistaken. Don't quote me on that. I would say do your research, but I think Detroit is up there as well. But I know for years, Baltimore, Maryland has been the number one murder per capita. Okay. And let me read that again. Baltimore, Maryland recorded the highest ever number of women killed in 2020, with at least 48 women murdered throughout the year, many of them Black. So with that, it's basically stating that all of them wasn't Black, but the majority of them were. So I just wanted to make sure that those stats were clear, that I wasn't saying that all 48 women murdered were Black, because per this article, it's basically saying the majority, but it doesn't give a percentage of that 48 to say which out of the 48 were Black, which percentage, I would say. Okay, so it's still not clear if the influx in killing the Black women last year was related to domestic violence, and as opposed to the rising in community violence. So with that said, they haven't distinguished between the fact that if it's DV or if it was community violence. And I will say it doesn't really matter, because they are lives that were lost, okay? Let me repeat that again. Lives were lost. Black lives were lost. And it doesn't even really matter Black lives, because I don't want anybody to misconstrue what I'm saying, because every life lost is tragic to me. But for this episode, we're talking about Black women, Black femicide, okay? No one should lose their lives at the hands of violence or any senseless murders or anything of that sort. Natural causes, okay, because that's natural causes. But at the hand of another human being, absolutely not. And I mean that across the board. No one, regardless of gender, sexual orientation, any of that, I don't agree with, okay? So I just wanted to just make that clear as well. Okay, let's go on. Many advocates view the stark rise makes it clear it's time to address the factors that have long made Black women face a 3 times higher homicide rate than white women, as well as why their risk of being murdered increased sharply last year. Now, that's something that we definitely need to research more. Why last year? Was it solely because of the pandemic and the high stress levels and things of that sort? You know, we need to look more into that. Now, there are signs that the higher rate of fatal violence against Black women is continuing this year. Through September 29th of this year, Black Femicide U.S. has tracked 1,068 women murdered across the U.S. this year. Wow. 1,068 women murdered across the U.S. this year. Wow. Let me say that again for emphasis, because sometimes we rush through stats and we don't allow them to really sink in. So just think about this year. We are in 2021, right? There were 1,068 Black women murdered across the U.S. this year. And I would think that the number would be higher. And the reason why I'm saying that, with all stats, it's not going to capture every single individual, because some may be still missing. Some probably haven't been reported. So I would think that number may be a lot higher than that. Okay. So that's very troubling, and it should be troubling to you too, but I know it's very troubling to me. Now, coming to grips and reckoning with the violence perpetuated within communities and within families, don't want to really go into that, you know, within families, because I want to keep it, because that's going down the rabbit hole, and I'm not gonna go there. But I'm just saying, sometimes when we have to reckon with violence in our communities and within our families, you know, there's a no snitching code that happens. You know, in the Black family, you know, we've always heard, you know, what goes on in this house stays in this house. And sometimes I will say this, I'm gonna be very gentle, but sometimes the very vile individuals in our family are the most protected. And I know we have heard many stories about that, like the person who have sexually abused someone in the family is the one protected. And I've heard so many stories about that in African-American families. And violence against women and, you know, things of that sort in our communities are not really treated like it needs to be treated, because there's a layer of protection that I think is very pathological, if you ask me. And we really need to wake up and get out of that. I know in communities, the no snitching code and things of that sort. And that's why I say the number could be very even higher, because of these buffers, if you will. I think very pathological buffers that we have in our communities that definitely need to be raised. Okay. So what can we do, you ask? What can we do to address this problem? Now, definitely the community thing, you know, what I just said, we need to start acknowledging what's going on in our community. And I'm always thinking that something is an attack and that we're being degraded or discriminated against. And this is not to say that this doesn't happen, because we know it does, right? My African-American woman, I know it does happen, but guess what? It's not the case all the time. So we need to take accountability and responsibility for ourselves. We just really do. Or we're never going to see changes in our community. We can't look at the external enemy if we're protecting the internal enemies. Let me say that again. We cannot look to address the external enemies if we cannot deal and address and hold accountable the internal enemies. I wasn't going to say this, but you know what I am. Maybe a month ago, I had a discussion on social media about men holding each other accountable. I got pushback by a few. Well, what a man does is not my problem. The hell if it isn't. You should be your brother's keeper just like I should be my sister's keeper. If I see my fellow sister doing something that I think that is harmful to herself first, to me and my community, I have an obligation. And when we get away from feeling that we don't have an obligation to check each other, of course in love, because delivery definitely means a lot, then I think we have lost the war already, so we might as well give up the battle. We definitely have to, and of course, let me just say this, sometimes we have to choose our battles, and we can't do this with everyone, of course, right? So what I explained to the individual is that the proximity, of course, counts. You have to have a relationship with a particular person and where they see you as a person that they want to listen to, okay? I can't just go to a Joe Blow down the street and a lady that I don't know and just tell her about herself, right? And I can't do it with hatred and condemnation, I should say. But my fellow friend who I have a relationship with, who I have a close bond with, of course I should be able to go to my sister and say, hey, you know, when you did that, you know, maybe that's not cool. And either she has a choice to receive it or not, just like I have a choice to receive her in my circle ongoing and as we move forward, because I'm one. I'm not gonna have people around me who I feel that are harmful, because if you're harming someone else, you'll definitely do it to me too, because you're in close proximity to me, okay? So enough of that. You know, we have a lot of women who've been murdered because of this, unresolved, and in the cold case files collecting dust. And I think that's sad. I think when we put a face to these people, imagine if this was your daughter, your sister, your aunt, your niece, you know, your cousin. And I think that's where we have moved away from, is from seeing people as human. When we see individuals as human, I think we will have a little bit more concern, okay? So, yeah, so I wanted to go in, but I think I'll do that a little bit after the break. I don't know if you guys have heard of a lady. Her name is Sarah Bartman. And the reason why I'm going to go into her is because I think the reason why we're at our situation right now is because of women being objectified. I'm sorry. And are men to blame? Partially. Are women to blame? Partially as well. when we tend to see each other as not human and as objects, we are more apt to harm them, right? Because if we see someone as not human without feelings, we're more apt to use them and abuse them. And I think that's what's going on. And I really hate it with this Instagram social influencer culture. What I see from a clinician and as a woman who I deem myself being, you know, whole and having self-love, not perfect by any means, but I do have self-respect. You know what I see? I see a whole bunch of women who are broken. And I do, you know, just from my field alone, I know what it looks like. So they can act like they are this confident, beautiful and vivacious, but they're broken. And I'm not going to really get into that, but they're broken. They really are, because when you have self-respect, you're not going to display things that should be shown to your husband, you know, someone that you have made this covenant with. And I'm saying covenant because that's my beliefs, you know. You can show whatever you want to with whoever you want to, but hey, this is my platform and this is what I'm saying. But for me, it's someone that I have a covenant with. And you just don't want to show that to everyone. And I've had individuals in my office, you know, on the surface, they're this very confident, you know, very liberated, but a lot of times they're in the office crying, they're broken, they're lonely. So when I say that, I'm not coming from a place of judgment, I'm coming from a place of expertise and having experience with these individuals who a lot of them are really not happy. And so never really getting attention in life, this is the only way they feel that they can. And guess who perpetuates that? Men who like their pictures, men who whistle call, and they feel like, guess what? When I'm doing this and doing that, I don't get attention. And I do this and I do. What do you think they're going to do more of? So, and I know a lot of men, and I've heard this, when women are harmed, or, you know, and I say murdered too, because we just had Miss Mercedes Moore, Janae, I can't think of her last name right off the hand, Gagier, I think. When she was murdered, you hear a lot of these men who basically berated her, degraded her, disrespected her, saying that's what she get. But she had 2.6 million followers. And guess who the majority of them were? Wasn't women. Who was liking her pictures? Who was commenting? These were men. But if they didn't do this, do you think she would have continued? Now, she could have, but 9 times out of 10, she probably wouldn't, because it wouldn't have been rewarded, is what I'm saying. So we all have to take accountability. We all do. So yeah, Black women are basically used as sex objects. And I'll say this, from the beginning of time, this has happened. But before I get into that, because I want to go into more of that, let's take a quick break, because I know I said a mouthful. And like I said, I know this topic is very heavy, and I want to provide it and deliver it to you in doses. So take a breather, take a little break, get some more water and whatever you need, and stay tuned. Of course, like I said before, if this is triggering for you, please, leave and come back when I have some more lighthearted content for you. I totally understand. So with that said, stay tuned, okay? I'll be back.
Girls now forced to grow up without their mother, and the man she was set to marry is now in jail, accused in her murder.
I would have never expected this in a million years.
Serena Rayford says she and Raven Coleman were lifelong friends.
It went from her having one birthday party, and I came to spend the night over her house for the weekend, and I never left. Like, I was there from every weekend since.
There from the beginning to the unexpected and tragic end.
And that's probably why she was calling me. She needed me. And I wish I could have answered the phone because she'd probably be here right now.
On October 30th, Detroit police got a call of a domestic dispute on Wayburn Street on the city's east side. When police pulled up, they found Raven shot in the chest, lying on the driveway. The person arrested and now charged in the murder, her own fiancé, Terrell Coleman.
We just went to Vegas a couple months ago with her fiancé.
The couple were set to get married next summer with seemingly plenty to look forward to.
I went with this girl and tried on wedding dress. She was happy. She was in love.
All of that gone in an instant. A mother of three little girls.
Not only did kids lose their mother, she was a daughter. She was a cousin. She was a friend.
And a lot of questions as to why.
She would want her mom and dad to know that they mean the world to her. And I know that she would want me to figure out what is going on.
Have a seat on the virtual couch.
Get it, girl. Let's go.
Welcome back, and I'm glad that you're still hanging in here with me. Mercedes Moore, a very popular IG model with over 2.6 million followers, she recently was murdered. Yep, murdered. But she was treated as an object, if you ask me. Now, let me explain. You know, in this culture, we are flooded with images of Instagram models showing some of this, showing some of that, right? But it came at a cost. She was treated as an object until her demise. And we can argue, but I'm just, you know, this is my opinion. I really think she was. And the reason why I say that is because when you are displaying yourself in such a way where individuals are gawking at you, you know, some may like, you know, some may dislike, but there's always that small percentage of individuals who may not have really good intentions, okay? Just because you think all of those people are your fans doesn't mean that they all are. It was speculated that the individual who killed her was someone that she had in a relationship with, but we don't know. But I would like to ask you this. Do you think the community failed her? Do you think people probably tried to get her to stop working in the industry that she was in? Because I heard she was an exotic dancer, or whatever you call it, a stripper. Okay. Even her own parents said, I think her father stated in an interview that, you know, she was quote unquote hard headed. And I was thinking that he probably tried to get her to get out of that lifestyle. But guess what? You know, as adults, you can't make your adult children do what you want them to do. They're going to live their lives. And sadly, I think her actions caused hers. Now, this is not to put blame on her at all. This is not to place blame on her, because no one has a right to be murdered. I don't care what they're doing, unless you're trying to harm someone else and someone is, you know, acting in self-defense, then I don't think that this should occur at all. But the reason why I brought it up is because I wanted to go into the whole objectification and how that ties into Black femicide. Now, Black women, yes, we do know, have been used as sex objects since the beginning of time. It isn't a new phenomenon. This current hypersexualized culture pertaining to Black women, perpetuated by the media, and has been, like I said, since slavery. Now, as enslaved women, you know, Black women were used as birthing factories, if you will, to supply a fresh supply of new workers. Sad, right? So even since then,
women were looked at as just objects to be used for financial gain. And I don't think it's any different today. Now, Meek Mills, the rapper from Philadelphia, he's been in the media more recently for his very controversial album cover art that was displayed also on a bus to promote his new album. Now, many have expressed their disgust and disdain as naked black women. Yes. And if you don't believe me, just Google it. Images of naked black women are sprawled all across his album cover and the bus that I was alluding to, in very suggestive and demeaning poses, further dehumanizing and objectifying black women. But where did all of this objectification begin? Now, I did say slavery, but I don't know if you all are familiar with someone by the name of Sarah Bartman. Now, she was born in the late 18th century in Eastern Cape, also known as modern day South Africa. Now, she was brought to the UK with a ship surgeon who profited, yes, I'm going to highlight that word again, financial gain, profited from exhibiting Sarah for the entertainment of the British public because of her huge, wait for it, buttocks. Does that sound familiar? Yeah. So she was put on display for her huge butt, which at that time was seen as a spectacle. It was very abnormal at that time, and we know it's not abnormal and uncommon today. Now, she subsequently spent most of her adult life being exhibited as a cage freak show attraction, both in London and Paris, where she died. Now, Sarah Bartman's reality as an attraction to behold and gawked at still happens today. Many women are clamoring even to get BBLs, some even to their demise, risking their lives to have these surgeries performed even in third world countries with subpar treatment facilities. Now, how does that all relate to this topic, you ask? Well, let me tell you. One is more apt to be harmed and dehumanized when they are seen as a mere object. Yes, when you say that one is more apt to be treated as such when one doesn't see them as human, I would think so. I think it increases the likelihood of them being harmed. So I think our culture, whether it's our music, films, movies, videos, I think it all plays a role. It's easy to harm something that we don't see as human. And psychopaths and sociopaths, this is the way they think. As a clinician, I'm telling you. Most times when a serial killer has been interviewed, he's alluded to the fact that he didn't see that individual as human. Okay? People are more apt to be harmed when they're just seen for objects to be used for their own pleasure. And sadly, many black women are seen as such, mere objects. Again, Malcolm X even stated that the most disrespected person is the black woman. Now, I will say this, there is some accountability to be had, right? It takes two to tango. So I'm not down with the whole slut movement either, you know, shaming women and saying that, oh, that's what she deserved because that's what she did. But I do think the slut movement that was brought on by Amber Rose, I think it's very toxic. I also think it's harmful to black women and all women alike. Now, I get what Amber Rose was trying to do. She was trying to make a negative label and stigma. She was trying to make it positive. She was trying to transform it into something more accepted, right? But, you know, to call yourself a slut, and don't get me wrong, we're adults. You can do what you want to do. But however, there's consequences, and everyone's out there is not going to be rooting for you, and they just have some very nefarious, you know, things that they just want to do. And so, again, you know, my condolences to Mercedes Moore's family. But I just hope we just be a little bit more responsible, because not only that, our little girls are even looking up to us, and they're copying this behavior. Okay. Again, you know, this culture that we're in, and I'm not saying that as an adult woman, you shouldn't be able to do and present yourself how you want to present yourself without being harmed, because you're actually right in that. We should be able to walk down the street and no matter what, and not be harmed, okay? But again, my platform is to educate, to inspire, to empower, to enlighten, and I always have to bring you two sides of the coin, okay? Two sides of the coin, always, so that we can just make better and informed decisions. So I know that was a lot, so let's take another quick breather real quick, and I just want to go into some things that we can do to help solve this problem. Of course, we can't do it overnight, but we can start to do some things, and whether it's, you know, enacting some policies and just changing our mindsets, you know, and looking at each other as human. But I don't want to go into much of that before the break, so I want you to come back. Again, if it's too much for you, I totally understand, but I hope you will stay the rest of the journey with me, because I'm almost done. And this has been a good topic, and I hope that you will learn something from it and also share, okay? So with that said, I'll be back. Stay tuned.
He shot her like she was a dog. And I wouldn't even do that to a dog.
Brittany Wilson exclusively speaking with ABC 13 News, telling us she went with her sister for an ultrasound on October 5th after finding out she was pregnant the day before she was murdered. Smith was nervous but excited.
We were happy. We were happy to be there.
Wilson says her sister told the man she was dating, Kwame Boyd. He didn't take the news lightly.
He did not want the pregnancy. He didn't want any more children.
Smith went to see Boyd to get money he owed her. Her text reveals she feared something could happen.
And she said, I'm going to get my money. If anything happens to me, this is where I'm at.
That same night, one of their other sisters received a chilling screenshot from Smith's best friend. The text sent from Smith, timestamped at 6:45 p.m., say, I've been kidnapped. I'm in the back of Kwan's truck. They called 911. According to court records, while police were investigating the kidnapping, Smith's body was found on Reed Street near Irvington. Boyd has been charged with capital murder and now has a warrant out for his arrest. Records show police found a positive pregnancy test in his apartment with a note and an ultrasound picture. Smith was one of five children. Her mother describes her as the life of the family. With a big career ahead of her, she was an entrepreneur and going back to school to get her master's in criminal justice.
She was my daughter. She was a wonderful person. She did not deserve what happened to her. And my main concern now is that justice will be served.
He shot her like she was a dog.
21-year-old salon owner murdered in her own shop over the weekend. Tonight, we learned that she was afraid for her life. WMAR 2 News' Abby Isaacs explains what court documents show. Abby.
Megan, 12 days before she was shot in the head at her beauty shop, Destiny Harrison filed charges against a couple who she said beat her and stole from her. Tonight, her grieving family is calling for justice.
She was my heart. All of us love her greatly. Just can't believe it.
A new mother, a loving daughter and niece, a beloved business owner.
Wonderful girl, entrepreneur, a go-getter. As you can see, she built this from the ground up.
Shot and killed in her Southeast Baltimore beauty salon Saturday evening.
Unbelievable. Some evil soul would do something like this.
Police say someone walked into Madame D Beauty Bar and shot 21-year-old Destiny Harrison in the head.
No respect for women. Whatsoever, to do this to a defenseless young lady who doesn't harm anyone, love everyone, it's senseless.
Just 12 days before her murder, Harrison said she was attacked in her salon when she confronted burglars. She wrote in a complaint that she found her neighbors inside, stealing hair bundles that she sells. When she tried to stop them, the couple beat her and took off with $3,000 worth of merchandise. She wrote, quote, "I'm scared for my life and business," end quote. They're now charged with assault, theft, and burglary. Police have not arrested anyone for her murder. They say there were other people inside at the time of the shooting and hope someone comes forward with information. Her family echoes that plea.
Somebody gotta know something. Please come forward. You need to get these demonic souls here. They need to pay for their crime. There's no doubt about that. In the name of Jesus, there's no doubt.
Did y'all enjoy the break? Now find your spot on the virtual couch and get ready to hear our girl, Letitia, drop some more gems on ya. Drop some more gems on them, Letitia.
Letitia, drop some more gems on them.
Welcome back, my lovelies. Now, prior to the break, I was discussing the whole slut walk movement of Amber Rose. And I think Black China was a part of that as well. Now, the whole movement, again, was to erase the stigma of women being seen as whores, okay? And they did that while, quote unquote, empowering women to embrace their sexual prowess and becoming unapologetically sexually liberated. However, again, what message is this sending? And, you know, some would say this is basically sending sheep into a pack of wolves, a wolf's den, right? We do have to take some accountability and be safe. Now, I'm not saying that because you are wearing certain things that you should be attacked or you should be assaulted. Absolutely not. Because men too should know how to have some self-control. And I'm saying men in this situation because, you know, I know there will be someone saying, well, women can be sexual predators too. Yes, they can. But in this case, we are talking about men that are attacking women. And we know that the stats are basically showing that there are more men that are violently attacking women than vice versa. Okay, enough said. Okay, so with that said, you know, there's been extensive coverage, as you have heard, even in the clips that I have inserted during this entire podcast episode. And it just really saddens me. I'm hearing things day in and day out. This podcast show is not long enough for me to insert the many clips and things that I hear on a daily basis. So with that said, I don't want to focus so much attention on the problem. I want to now turn to some solutions. What can we do to end Black femicide? Yes, femicide as a whole, but in this episode, again, as I alluded to before, we're talking about the assault and the murder of Black women, okay? So the first one of those would be basically, what can Black women do to increase awareness? Well, one thing that we can do as a solution is to keep sharing stories, just like what I'm doing now. You know, creating podcasts, having those hard discussions on social media platforms. I know I've been seeing a lot of these discussions even on Clubhouse, and, you know, a lot of them have been very heated, I would say. And that saddens me as well. You know why? Because when we bring things to the forefront, men, because I know you're my audience as well, we need you to listen to us, okay? We're not saying you are the ones that are actually doing it. And guess what? Some of you may be. Who knows? But you have to listen. You cannot gaslight us women and say, oh, we're capping. Those things are not happening. They're happening, okay? They're right smack dab in front of your faces. And I would just hate that the next person on the news be your daughter, your sister, your cousin, your mother, your aunt. So yeah, we need your open ears and we need you men to listen to us, okay? And share these stories even amongst your friends. Because guess what? If I'm going to hold my sisters accountable, you have to do the same with your brothers, okay? And we can't say, well, I can't tell that grown man what to do. Yes, you can. If that's your friend, he should be able to listen to you. Because at the end of the day, we are depending on you men to protect us, okay? Enough of that. Now, what can the black women and black men do, again, to stop? Well, that was another question. Basically the same thing that I just said. I said to increase awareness, stories, and things of that sort, okay? Mentorship. I will say mentorship is another way. And having a healthy outlet for men and boys to release anger. So the first thing that I said prior to this was increase awareness of black femicide. So it differs in that, just increasing the awareness, talking more about it, having platforms that are centered around it. And the second one that I just talked about is basically to have healthy ways to release anger. Because a lot of these stories, as I talked about, is basically men not knowing how to have healthy outlets, how to release their anger appropriately. Anger is a very natural emotion. It's very normal to be angry. It's what we do with it, fellas, okay? And women too, but of course, in this podcast, we're talking to men. To just add even a little bit more to that, we need to talk to our young girls about being safe and how to identify abuse and move away from the notion that pain and struggle equals love, ladies and girls. Love and abuse, no, I'm sorry. Abuse is not love, okay? Love is not abuse, vice versa. That is toxic. We have to get removed and thinking that toxicity is love. It's not. It's not. And it may feel good, but it's not. It has very detrimental results physically, mentally, and emotionally. Okay? So I just want to say that. And if you're in an abusive relationship, ladies, please leave. I will definitely leave some resources at the end of this podcast for you, okay? Another thing, I think more political initiatives, town halls, call to actions need to happen as well. Yes, I talked about raising awareness on a micro level, but we need more of it on a macro level as well. And as you know, micro is basically the things that are close to us in our homes, you know, with our friends, but macro is more external to us, legislative, things that the government can do as well, okay? What stereotypes prevent us from seeing black women as violent victims? See, this is another area that we need to address. We need to end the stereotypes that are portrayed in the media. A lot of times we see the trope, the strong, independent black woman. And I'm not gonna lie, I've been guilty of that myself. And I've stirred away from that because I think it can do more harm than good. And that's not to negate the fact that we are strong and independent in a lot of cases. And we've overcome a lot of things. But if we continue to hone on that and center the discussion on that, people would only see us as caricatures, individuals who do not feel pain. And we see the ramifications of that in the medical field, right? We have black women that are dying every day because we have medical professionals with whole medical degrees saying that they didn't think that black women felt the same amount of pain as our white counterparts. But I'm not going to go down that rabbit hole. If you think I'm lying, please Google this. There's whole videos as well as empirical research regarding this, okay? Yeah, so like I said, this has been perpetuating the medical field and it needs to stop, okay? And so those are just a few things that we can do, but I want to take a brief break and I want to go in a little bit further and a little bit deeper about this, because this is something that is near and dear to my heart. And I'm not going to stop until I see a decrease in these numbers, because it's just sad. It's really sad. So after this break, I will be back with more. So please stay tuned.
Detroit police are crediting the community with this arrest, saying that a tip led them to David Hammond at a home in St. Clair Shores. Now, as police have been looking for him the past 24 hours or so, we've been digging into his past, and he definitely has one. Back in 2020, he was charged with assault and domestic violence against the same woman that was found murdered yesterday. Detroit police have been on the hunt for David Hammond since Wednesday morning, wanted somehow in connection to the murder of his ex-girlfriend Andrea Tucker in her driveway on Detroit's east side. Hammond was already facing charges against Tucker for assault, domestic violence, and arson, appearing in court on those charges before the 40-year-old was shot and killed.
It's very, very unfortunate that this kind of thing happened, you know. A lot of us, it's our worst nightmare.
Judge Kenneth King of the 36th District Court heard the earlier case against Hammond, who's been out on personal bond since he was charged back in 2020.
He showed up for court on the dates that he was supposed to be in court. There were no incidents, no bond violations. There were no red flags that gave us any reason to believe that something like this would happen. Hindsight is 2020.
On November 3rd, Judge King bound the case over to circuit court to another judge. Hammond remained on personal bond.
Did she request any sort of protection from police or the courts during testimony?
Not at the time that the case came before me. There was no mention of it, either from the witness herself nor from the prosecution, that there was any issue. My understanding that did not come about until after I heard the case and bound the case over.
Andrea Tucker, the victim, called Detroit police days before her death, saying Hammond was stalking her and she had surveillance video to prove it. Detroit police say they requested that the Wayne County Prosecutor's Office file a motion with circuit court to get Hammond's bond revoked. In a statement from the prosecutor's office, they say Hammond couldn't be ID'd in that surveillance video, but the prosecutor in court against Hammond on Wednesday never even heard about that video. Again, that motion for having Hammond's bond revoked was never filed Wednesday during that court hearing in circuit court. And that hearing happened just about an hour before Andrea Tucker was murdered. Now, David Hammond being called a person of interest tonight. No charges quite yet. Reporting live, Jessica Dupnak, Fox 2 News.
Jessica, I know it's early in the investigation, but the evidence so far would seem to indicate that more than one person could be involved in this alleged crime.
Absolutely, and that's why DPD saying person of interest, to the extent of which Hammond is involved. We don't know quite yet, but it sounds like he knows something.
Welcome back, my people. So before the break, I discussed some solutions to begin eradicating Black femicide. Now, the first of those was raise awareness. We need to raise awareness. And I think we've been doing an okay job, but we can do a lot better, because I haven't really seen a lot of coverage when it comes to Black women and Black people in general. We all know that, right? We have a problem with the news covering our stories. So we need to get the word out to news outlets, including papers and magazines, when we know things are going on in our communities that need better coverage. Number two, increase mentorship of our Black boys and men to educate them to respond in more healthy ways to express their anger. Now, as a clinician, I always tell my clients that anger is natural. It is a natural human emotion. It's what we do with it, how we express it, okay? And I believe that the black femicide issue is because we need to express our anger and have healthier outlets and not take them out on each other, okay? Number three of those, teach women how to identify to prevent from engaging in toxic and abusive relationships. So let me say that again. And let me just break it down in more layman's terms, okay? We need to teach our women, and I'm a woman myself, to be involved with healthier people. Toxic relationships are just not okay. Get out of those toxic relationships. When you see the red flags, and we know we've been seeing that around social media, get out. I don't care what, get out. And us women, we have intuition that we were divinely given, discernment, as someone, you know, other people call it. I call it that as well. Discernment, right? God has given us a gift of discernment. Use it. When you know something that's not right, it usually, we're going to feel it, right? You know that gut feeling when you just know something that's not okay? Trust it. And it doesn't mean that we can't love people and be respectful. We just have to say, you know what, playa? Me and you are just not to be in a relationship. Not like that. Anyway. Let me move on. Another thing we need to do is increase political initiatives, which is, you know, town hall, call to actions, even if it's, you know, petitions and things of that sort. Things that on a local and even a more global level that, you know, some of these things need to be in legislation. I'm just being honest with you. I would even say more programs centered around building healthy relationships in the Black community with the assistance of faith-based organizations. That's our local churches. You know, we see a lot of churches in our communities and we need to call them to the carpet. Now, I won't say all, because we have some that are really doing great work in the community. But if you're asking for tithes and offerings and all of that stuff, we need to see you out with boots on the ground, actually working and helping the community, the things that God wants the church to do. Get out of the four walls and get to working for the people in the community. And this is, I think, a great initiative that churches could definitely take on. And even more so, to go even further, you know, churches have, what, 80 to 90% of women? So why wouldn't a church want to get on this and protect their parishioners, congregation, or whatever you want to call it? I think churches even more so need to be involved, because the main people that are in the pews are women. So definitely spread this word. By ending stereotypes that are portrayed in the media, this is one of my things that is just like near and dear to me. I am very sensitive about what women are portraying in the media, in social media, and all of that. And the reason why I don't carry myself that way, but when other women are, it affects us all, right? So what would make a man think that the woman that's doing all these things, when he approaches me, that I wouldn't be one of them? So see, a lot of people don't really realize that what they do doesn't only affect them, not only affects their household and their own children, but affects other women who are portraying themselves in a more presentable way. Now, I don't want to debate about what's presentable and what's not. However, we all are responsible in how we portray ourselves, and we just have to know that certain ways that we portray ourselves, whether it's fair or not, because we know there are double standards. I will definitely say that. However, we can't get caught up in the nuances of life. We have to know what we do. Is it causing us to be more vulnerable and to increase the harm of ourselves and our loved ones? So that's all I care about. I know things are not fair. Things are not going to be fair in life. We know that, right? But what am I doing now? Is it affecting my livelihood? Is it affecting my safety? Those things I do care about. And are they affecting other people around me? You know, by my choices. Now, some of the things or solutions that I think that could happen is strengthening surveillance and research. that could help in screening femicide and intimate partner violence. Now, I believe there is a need to strengthen collection and analysis of mortality data and, the rates of murders that are going on. I think there need to be more research because, you know, when there's more research, we can understand it a lot better. And I think data needs to come from police, mortuaries, courts, medical examiners, and the like. And I read this in an article, and I definitely agree with that. The more research and the more data we receive and collect, the more we can understand to develop more preventative measures, I would say, okay? This would also help us to increase collaborations with these individuals, agencies as well. Police, medical staff, and other relevant agencies need better partnerships. And I think that's why sometimes these cases fall through the cracks. There's not really good collaboration. And I know, you know, medical doctors are not police and vice versa. But the communication, I think needs to be a lot better. With that said, training more health and medical staff to improve documentation of cases. Now, I do know this, you know, when a woman comes into the hospital, she may not be very forthcoming about what happened to her. And sometimes if an individual, you know, succumbs to her injuries, we may not never know what actually happened. So I know that is the case in some cases, right? But, you know, with that said, we can improve detection, specifically regarding women who are pregnant. And I don't know if you're aware of this, but women who are pregnant, they are more prone to be abused. And I received my domestic violence advocate certificate way back in grad school, like in 2006. But with me being a therapist now, I have trainings and things of that sort, so I don't have to get that particular certification because I am a therapist, licensed therapist at that. But this was one of my fortes. Pregnant women are more prone to be abused and murdered. And guess who the perpetrator usually is? The person that she is pregnant by. And we've heard some cases like that in recent weeks, and I have some clips even in this episode, so please pay attention to those clips. But if you know anyone who is pregnant and who may be in an environment, I would say relationship, that may be unsafe, please, if you can, help. And see, that's what we need to do more of. We need to do more things within our circle of influence. And if everyone did that, this problem wouldn't be as bad as it is. We need to get out of the, it's not my problem, it's not my business, and, you know, not being afraid of being called nosy or whatever, because I know all of my friends know and family know, I get into your business. If I feel like something is not right, I'm saying something about it. So, and that's just me. And I think we all need to do that. I really do. Okay, train and sensitize police. Oh, I can't stress this enough. In recent years, I would say the police has gotten a lot better, but I think our legal system, our police officers need to be trained even more so, because there are cases, you know, of women who have protective orders. They're not being honored. Courts are basically saying they can't do anything. They need more evidence. And it's like, come on. What do you need for her to be killed? And then that's your evidence? It's like, come on. And being a therapist, I've heard so many cases like this. And so we just need to do a better job in our criminal justice system to receive more training and sensitization to identify and document femicide. Not just Black femicide, but all femicide. But in this episode, again, I am concentrating on the murder of Black women, which is Black femicide. Also, to go even further, we need to collaborate with Child Protective Services, policies and training as well. That's a whole nother episode, of course, because I don't want to go down the rabbit hole and start talking about children. But yeah, why I'm on that topic, CPS workers also need to be trained more, because we have teenagers who may be in the system, you know, because there is a such thing as dating violence. And so you have individuals who probably haven't aged out the system just yet. And so CPS workers need to be aware of that, and foster care workers, and need to be aware of the signs and what it looks like, and just know how we can minimize this from happening, and communicating effectively with police officers so that they can do what they need to do legally. Okay. I know some people may disagree with this thing right here, this part, but reducing gun ownership. Now, I am the first one to say that guns are not the culprit that kills people. It's people, right? But they are able to do it with something. I think, you know, with gun ownership, if we had more laws regarding that, I think that it would definitely reduce the murders. Because, yeah, a person can get anything and murder someone. However, we all know, and we're not going to play dumb, that guns are more lethal, right? And, yeah, so I'm not going to go all into the whole gun law thing and gun owners' rights, and you know, I'm just not gonna do it. The Second Amendment and all of that good stuff. Yes, we do have a right to bear arms. Yes, we do. But you know, a lot of times they get into the hands of irresponsible people, and I know a person can still get a gun illegally, and most of the times the guns are out in the streets are illegally owned, I would say. So, but that still doesn't mean that we can't do anything for the ones who do own guns legally. Okay. So with that said, that concludes my episode today. So I hope you learned a lot. I just want us to be a lot safer going into the new year. I know we've been looking at a lot of news, and almost every day I'm looking at the news on social media. Another woman has lost her life. So if you see something, you guys, say something. Even if you have to go behind your friend's back and make a report, or even if it's you, get out. There's resources out there for you. And yeah, if you want even more resources from me, please feel free to email me at virtualcouchpodcast1@gmail.com. And I think even in this episode, I will insert the number to the domestic violence hotline. It's a national domestic violence hotline that I would love for you to have. And please share and spread that to your loved ones as well. And with that said, have a beautiful day and take care. And I hope to see you soon, or hear you soon, on the virtual couch. Take care. I'm so appreciative of the love and support that you, my loyal listeners, provide to me. However, one of the most important things to me is for you to remain safe. So if you are in a domestic violence situation, please call 911 if you are in immediate danger. You may also call the National Domestic Violence Hotline at 1-800-799-7233 or 1-800-799-SAFE. This number is available 24 hours, 7 days a week. There will be someone there to take your call and to assist you. Again, they are available 24 hours, 7 days a week. So please stay safe.
Wasn't that show fire? I hope you enjoyed your time on the virtual couch with our girl Letitia on Letitia's Virtual Couch. You did that, Letitia.